Reverend William Deverell,
yes,
here in Talla. Talk to me first a little bit about your background. Where did you originally come from?
Well, I was primary school in Rathgar and Brighton Square locally, and then I moved out to Blackrock for secondary schooling and was married out in Shankill. Now, the problem is that when I say in Talla that I'm from Rathgar and Blackrock, you can imagine the reaction. So I assure them that those areas have come on great since I left them, and wait till I leave Talla. But, you know, Talla has come on a lot since I arrived. So that's where I'm from.
The Deverells, where are they?
Are from Portlaoise, the Heath, the Rockadonna Mace. So Port Arlington and towns like that would be French Huguenot, and probably that is the connection, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's really only the one family here. There was several hardware stores in Rathgar, and there was a lady lawyer out in Greystones. And the hardware stores in Rathgar, they owned a shop in Henry Street, and they employed Sean O'Casey. So in the shadow of the gunman, there's a Deverell, and the usual remark, that's not a very Irish sounding name.
Talk to me about what your father did.
He worked in Brooks Thomas, and he opened up the Bluebell, the Nace Road branch, and they thought he was mad, but the advantage was the Dublin builders could go out against the traffic and the country builders could reach him. And then after that, he opened up Fairview, which was their garage for their fleet of trucks, and he had a drive-in where people could, builders could come in and load.
Mm-hmm.
So that's hardware management, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. How many in your family?
I'm the eldest of three boys. So I've two brothers who really got into property.
Mm-hmm.
Out in the Dunleary area.
Mm-hmm. And your mother's maiden name?
Gillespie. And she would be from Roscommon, from Boyle in Roscommon. But she only had one brother, and he sold up the farm.
Mm-hmm.
So he met a woman from the north, and well, he went to Canada, but the two girls, they're twins, so I think she took fright and came home. Yeah. So he was ahead of his time. My grandfather had built up a big farm, but he realized
this is up in Boyle now, isn't it?
Yes. So my uncle moved up beside a factory in the north, right at the beginning of the Troubles, and she thought it only last 6 months. His children are exactly my age.
Mm-hmm.
And he part-time farmed and worked, supplemented with the factory. And he also didn't want to send his kids off to boarding school. He was able to send to a local school, etc.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, would you would you go back up there again? Do you have any relatives?
The only reason I was up north was because when I went in for the church, we are about 2% of the population down here, and there weren't many parishes big enough to carry a curate 15 years ago. And the lads from the north, it's an all-Ireland church and all-Ireland theological college, so the lads from the north come down to Braemar Park in church town beside the Mount Carmel, and we tend to go up to serve our curacies up there. And I went to Port Stewart on the north coast beside the Giant's Causeway. But the problem is that nobody knows about you back here. So I came down then to the border for my first parish, 6 Mile Cross, Carrickmore, near Omagh.
How did you make up your mind? Did you decide when you were a young lad that this is the route I'm going to take?
Not at all, no. When we tend to get confirmed a bit later, so I was about 14, and I took it very serious without realizing it. And I remember asking my dad, who would have been very involved in the church, as would all his family, as a layman, like, how come he didn't get ordained? And I obviously was asking it of myself without realizing. But I was discovered that I was a dyslexic when I went in for the church. So I wasn't academic, and I thought I wasn't good enough or holy enough or knew my Bible inside out enough. And I was only when a young curate showed up in my parish and I was coming up in marriage, I think the two things combined forced me to finally admit. I saw in this young curate that he wasn't perfect. Now, he was a brilliant preacher, but he just had a couple little mannerisms. He was green, he was new. And of course, then when I looked around at the middle-aged clergy, I realized they were far from perfect as well. And so, like, I had been in business for not quite 10 years, you know. And back in 1980, straight out of school, Apple computers, the first Apples in Europe, and then in sales. And then I made the mistake of going out on the road with telephone systems at the height of the recession. So I retreated indoors to Weirs of Grafton Street, the jewellers, fourth largest in Europe. So I used to appeal to people's greed, and now I try and restrain it. And I was a lot better at appealing to it.
Your days in college.
Yes.
How many years did you go before you were?
With ourselves, you either have a degree or be over 25. So you'd have a degree and then you do your theological degree, or in my case, go in as a mature student. Trinity will accept you if you're over 25. So your life experience to 25 was taken in place of a degree. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to, like everybody else, do 3 years, but I had to, after the first year, failing the exams and counted the dyslexia, I had to take a year out and try and learn ways around the dyslexia before I resume my studies, you know.
How difficult was that for you?
Oh, very difficult, because I'd given up a job and I was a year married at that stage, and although I put down a good deposit on a house, it was my wife who was paying it off, and the car wasn't going to last the extra year and that sort of thing. And obviously emotionally, I always said, like, I was sure when I went into the church, but after having a year of it, I was even more sure. And obviously didn't want just academic to be a stumbling block.
Mm-hmm. When you came down here then, afterwards, your church.
Yes.
The first time here in Tala, was it?
Yeah, I had done... my first parish was small, two little tiny country parishes in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
6 Mile Cross and Carrickmore near Rome. And yeah. 6 Mile Cross would have been very Irish and Carrickmore would have been very Republican. So everything that was a disadvantage in 6 Mile Cross was an advantage in Carrickmore. Southern accent, being able to speak Irish, etc. So then, as I say, I came to Tala then. And I have been here 9.5 years.
What brought you to Tala?
Well, I think that if I was going to do something for my church, I was coming up on 40, I have been a late ordinant, this was the time to do it. Mm. Now, Tala had really turned the corner at that stage. And of course, we've been blessed with immigrants since, so the parish has really flourished. And you would have Indians who are nurses in the hospital, but they would be Orthodox, but three different strands of Orthodox. And then you'd have Africans who are mainly Nigerians, but Rwanda, Kenya, Malawi, South Africa, Zimbabwe.
A huge mixture. But yeah. We'll talk about the immigrants in a minute, but I'd like to go through your time here in Tala. When you came in first, what were you faced with and what was it like?
Well, when I came initially, Tala, 30 years ago, people had moved out from Crumlin, set up as newly marrieds, and now their children were young adults moving down the country. So there was nobody younger than I, and there were no children. So we had to wait for it to be reborn, so to speak, the area over again. And as it happens, that it was reborn with immigrants, as I listed there for you. Mm-hmm. And they're all younger than me and all have kids.
But at the time, they weren't, you know, they were only beginning to come in.
Yes, yes. It took a year or two, you know. Mm-hmm.
Were there a lot of, did you find a lot of, say, people who didn't have a lot of money, maybe unsettled travellers, you know, big estates?
Here in the parish... my own parishioners would have been fairly settled, very well established, etc. A lot of people would have aspired to living in Rathfarnham and kind of sent their kids there, and some had moved away there over the years. But the parishioners who were here were well embedded in the parish.
That would be, I'm talking generally now.
Right. No, I missed the travellers, etc. I believe like they were camped on the bypass, etc. But don't forget, like, I arrived at the end of the last century, just coming into the millennium.
Yeah, that's so true.
Tala, well, I had really turned the corner, like, no doubt about it. The Celtic Tiger, I think Tala is one of the few places that has benefited. Hence California, because all the tradesmen living well. And you know, it really has it had got the hospital by that stage, it had got the South Dublin County Council, it had got the library, the IT college. You know, it really had begun to take the square. It really had begun to take off. Like, it was just on the crest of a wave, really, I would have thought, just about when I arrived. So I've really been here for the good times.
Yes, indeed. Now, it did very much a new.
Oh, yes. All that high rise.
Futuristic.
Yes. When I arrived, the idea was that you were to have two-story housing and everybody have a view of the mountains. And that was true. But now with all the high rise around the square and around the village, and my own church is a victim of it because it was always seen from any angle. And now it's almost totally concealed.
Yes, but it stands out as a landmark. It is a
yeah, but it would have been on a hill. It would have been very visible for a long way around, you know.
Yeah.
But
who are your parishioners then here in Tala? What are they made up of?
Well, essentially, as I say, they're people who moved out from Crumlin, and I suppose you might say lower middle class. I wouldn't have too many professionals, and there wouldn't be too many Mercedes or BMW about the parish, but a very solid, loyal, a really lovable group. Small, but you know, committed. You can expect, certainly when I arrived, about 60 out. That has grown now to 80, etc. But you're not going to have everybody out every Sunday. Like, a regular can almost be once a month. So that's coming out of a much bigger pool. But they're very loyal and yet very much involved in the local community.
And now the immigrants coming in then. Now, would some of those immigrants be your parishioners as well?
Oh, yes. Yes. As I say, the Indian nurses would tend to be Orthodox and would tend to have had very good relations with the Anglican Communion, and would come and would actually use our church. Each different strand has nearly used our church, having a fortnightly service. Some have outgrown us and gone into town. And the Indian community generally would have had their Onam Festival, which is a bit like our St. Patrick's Day, in our parish hall. But again, they outgrew that a good 5 years ago more. Mm-hmm. But they got started with myself, and then and I still have a fortnightly service. The priest is studying in Maynooth, and he goes to Belfast, where obviously there's another Orthodox community up there.
Mm-hmm. You're involved a lot with the immigrants coming in here, aren't you?
Yes, well, I have a drop-in centre. A local Brigidine sister approached me for a drop-in centre, and I have, I would like to say that's been going, certainly been going about 3 years anyway. And as I say, like a good half, a third to a half of the congregation would be immigrants. Mm-hmm. Now, as I say, mainly Africans, but And they would have been Anglican usually in Africa.
Yeah, and how do you see your role with these people? You know, would you talk to them?
Oh, very much so. And like, you'll forgive me, when you arrive from the country where you had people in their 20s come to church, and you come to the city and you find nobody younger than yourself. Well, if any young person turns up to the church, or any new person, you make them extremely welcome and you try and go out and visit them, etc. And obviously that's what I did with the immigrants as well. And they obviously felt at home, and you put a lot of work into trying to get to know them and trying to integrate them. And I'd always appoint an immigrant as a church warden, who's the person who really greets you. So hopefully when you come to church and you see an immigrant greeting, you say, well, jeepers, maybe there's a chance for me if he's got established. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I try to welcome them. And
would you look at the immigrants as being non-nationalists with totally different traditions, and would have a very different lifestyle outlook to come into a community? It's quite difficult.
I don't really know about that. I think it's rather like being a Protestant in this country. Like, you're Irish, but you've an extra dimension, and that's the way that I look at an immigrant. That they're a member of the congregation, but they're exotic. They have, and in my experience, most people have the same aims. They want to have a reasonable standard of living, provide for their family, the opportunities for their family, they like to come along to church and feel part of a community. And of course, we're not small enough that they can feel that. Now, their faith is very deep. It's like going back 50 years. They're out every Sunday. They bring their kids. And an African will tell you, like, that they live in such a corrupt environment that their only hope is in God. They've lost all hope in the state. You may have the money for medicine for your child, but you can go to the pharmacy, but it mightn't be in stock. So God is much more real to them, I think. Mm-hmm. And I have an Indian, a young father, he's actually my church warden, seriously ill in ICU at the moment. And the Indians meet every evening, 7 to 8, and have prayers in his home. And he had an operation midnight to 4 a.m. and they filled the chapel in Beaumont. And, you know, they can make the rest of us look like we're playing at it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Do you find that your brief in the work that you do is quite similar to what a Catholic priest would do? Or do you find it in some ways different?
I would think it is very similar. And like my Catholic colleagues have been blessed in their case with Polish and Filipinos. And I know that, you know, it's the Filipino nurses and many of them have formed choirs and have rejuvenated parishes. And again, I know like that they would have masses in their own languages, etc. So I would have thought that it's extremely. I take in 12 Roman Catholic parishes. I run from Knocklyon out to City Road West and up to the Naas Road, not technically, but in reality. And I take in about 12 Roman Catholic parishes, and I have, you know, I know all the priests in those parishes and work closely with them. Don't forget that my Irish parishes, I meant to say it earlier, are all mixed marriage, and usually their parents are mixed marriage. So that's what I should have qualified when I said that they were involved in their local church, etc., or local parishes and community, etc.
Do you find that, you know, that it's changed you as quite a young man of the church, yeah. That, you know, the role of minister has quite changed from what it was in the past, though. Was there, you know, a certain type of position put on a church minister from, say, the middle of the 1900s?
That's a good question, and I saw a book on that, and I think it was about 50 euros, so I didn't purchase it. But I think to a large extent, our role probably hasn't changed that terribly much. Now, obviously, you are fighting to make it relevant, etc. But by and large, your first duty is to provide worship on a Sunday, and your second duty is to, pastor. And to support people. And obviously the issues that they're dealing with in more liberal times are different, but I would have thought that there isn't a lot of difference. In the Church of Ireland, we've been small, and we have a parish hall with an activity every night, and you kind of would have got to know your parishioners well. Having children yourself and pick them up from the school gate or from the scouts or the guides meant I think that you were fairly close. I think primarily because you were small in numbers, you had the luxury of being close. In our system, you could be a parish priest in your late 20s if you went, you have that opportunity. Now it would have been like where I started, in the back of Beyonds, but you are responsible, and of course if anything goes right you get to
can enjoy. Who are you responsible to
the bishop, but not in the same way as the Catholic priest. The bishop is a figurehead, etc. He has a relatively little control. I have the title deeds of the parish, I'm there for life. Usually what happens is another parish comes along and headhunts you, or you might express an interest in another parish. They have an AGM every year at Easter, and they elect people onto the committee. And it's not like a parish council where the priest brings on his friends. I've absolutely no control over who comes on, and there's a full set of accounts, and the people are in charge of the money, and he who controls the purse strings controls all.
What about a living? Do you find it difficult, or do you find
you get the average industrial wage, but you do get a house as well, which of course is becoming increasingly valuable. And in my own case, I have a house myself. And I have a tenant in it who has paid it off at this stage. Hopefully I live long enough to retire to it. But if anything were to happen to me, my wife and children would have to be out within 3 months of my death. Mm. So it's important that they've somewhere to go.
When you look across the fence and you look at the Catholic tradition,
yeah,
and you see a priest living in his parochial house on his own, how do you think in terms of, being on his own? You're married, you have children,
yeah,
and you're still practicing and doing pastoral work.
I really can see no good reason not to be married. And some would suggest that it had more to do with church property, and it was only 1,000 years ago with the split between East and West. And in the Orthodox, the Jewish rabbi, the Muslim, everybody, and all the other Christian denominations are all married, even some of the ancient ones like Coptics, etc. So I can see no good reason. I can see plenty of reasons, as I said, just picking your kids up from the school or the organizations. And also I often say I have about 10 sets of ears. My wife will hear something at the mother's union, somebody being ill or whatever, at the women's group or at the music group, or my children in the junior or senior part of the school, or in the guides or the scouts. So I think that if you're preaching to your kids, you'll be relevant, and you always have the props, and you have some idea of youth culture as well.
What's your wife's first name?
Valerie.
Valerie. Does Valerie help you out?
Yes. Now, she's a nurse, but part-time here in the hospital. And she, as I say, she heads the women's group and the music group, and would the Women's World Day of Prayer for the Greater Tala area. And she'd also teach the Sunday school, the song for the monthly family service, and my daughter is a junior teacher in the the Sunday school. So yes, and it means that if anybody rings up for me at home, although I encourage them to ring me direct on a mobile, but there's always somebody to answer, and at least a babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they ring up in a crisis.
What do you do in your spare time?
I don't have a lot. I did a lot of cycling and would still cycle. We gave up the second car about 8 years ago, so we shared the car, and I would commute cycle. But it really tends to be the family, put the time into the family. I have a teenage daughter and a son still in primary school, and we have a caravan that we use for the holidays.
Mm. How do you see the church in the future, your church? The you know, when you talk about I suppose the Church of Ireland, how do you see that?
Well, of course, now if I knew that, I'd be a man in demand. The Church of Ireland has jumped. It was at 15%, and with the Nathemary decree, where if you married a Catholic, you had to become Catholic and rear your kids Catholic. The population dropped to 2%. Some people didn't get married. Some people moved abroad. But we dropped there to 90,000, and recently we've gone back up to about 120,000. Now, there's a difference between what people put on a census form and what I see in church, but it would give you hope. I'm quite sure some of that is mixed marriage, and yes, some of it I'm sure is immigrants as well. What the church holds for the future, it's terribly hard to know. I think the real issue is to make it relevant. I'm amazed at how modern psychology validates Christianity, but I think we find it terribly hard to sell it, to make it relevant. Yesterday I was listening to Mooney, and he had a woman on about being happy as a psychologist, and she had studied the placebo effect, and she said that it was 50% genetic and 40% your attitude. And she didn't use this language, but this is what she meant. She said in her case, she counts her blessings. Mm-hmm. And I think if we could find practical ways of justifying Christianity or explaining the benefits, I think those who come to church take it for granted and are not capable of explaining it to people who don't. I often say about cycling, you would think that to cycle in my position is very impractical, if only the weather. And I could really sell you cycling as practical. I'm not so sure I'm able to sell Christianity as effectively. Now, I do try at funerals and weddings, when I know that most people wouldn't have been in church in a while, to say to them, first of all, have a practical message for them, but also say, well, like, I hope you've enjoyed your time here, taking an hour out to reflect, ask what all this rushing about is, this hectic lifestyle in the Celtic Tigers all for. What are we rushing about for? Just even to be still, to chill, to reflect. But it's really to make the Sunday morning experience relevant. Now, I have a children's sermon every Sunday, and that is both enjoyable, but you're making one point and you're making it well, and you usually have a visual, plus you have interaction. And as you're asking basic questions, I think the adult is saying, well, what is the answer to that question, as the children are attempting to answer it. Mm-hmm. I think to have lively worship. But it was the 1200th anniversary of St. Maelroom when I arrived, and we had this living history weekend where it was all reenacted. And I often wonder how much your average mass or service is a living history. Is it just dead? Like, how alive is it for the person who comes out of church? And I think that's what you have to do. I've just come from town where I have on a rota for a healing service. And I think it's things like that that really make Christianity relevant. But to communicate that to the wider audience. And I think that Irish people are spiritual. I think they've just got very busy and God has got squeezed out of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to be the things that shout most that we give time to, like our workplace commitments, etc. And I think family misses out, let alone God.
How much work do you put into your ceremonies when you give a sermon on a Sunday morning? I mean, do you plan it?
Oh yes, and you put a lot of work in. And I start with the children's service, and then I try and go on to develop that in the adult. But you put an awful lot of work in, and the sad thing is, you get down from every sermon and you say, now what did I say, what was I trying to say, and could I have said it better? And of course you could. Sometimes I have an early morning 8:30 and I'd have a dry run at that, just to, you know, to help me communicate it better the next service. But that for me is the challenge.
Yeah.
The fact that you never have arrived.
Do you find that that the people going to church on a Sunday are elderly people, middle-aged, young?
No, because Tala was a new town, all my people would have been middle-aged. As I said, they had their adult children who were moving away. And since that, it's all immigrants who are younger than myself and have children younger than mine. So, there is the odd Irish person who also comes along, young person. And it's a challenge, though, because you can talk about the people who are in church, but it's the vast majority who aren't.
Mm-hmm.
On a Saturday morning when I get up, I need have no worry about disturbing anybody because all my neighbours are up. On a Sunday morning, I have to be a lot more careful because most people are lying in. Now, I appreciate that some people go off a Saturday evening, but I think we all know that the vast majority, it is a minority interest.
Mm-hmm. Do you think a minister's job has changed over the years? That are you more hands-on person than, say, you know, people from the other generations would have been doing the same work as you?
Yeah, you kind of asked me that earlier, and I don't know really if it has changed. I think because we are so small that it was always hands on.
Yeah.
But as a middle-aged person, and she was no more than, she probably wasn't that much older than myself, said we were reared in an environment, in an assumption of belief. She says the kids now are reared in an assumption of doubt. You know, we just assumed there was a God, etc. They've been reared in a very secular environment. And I think that is true of Europe compared to America,
mm-hmm.
North America.
I in the past, saw that, you know, there was a very definite line drawn between the Catholics and the Protestants, whether they were Church of Ireland or from the Methodist Protestant faith. But it was a mortal sin for a Catholic really to enter into a Protestant church.
Yeah.
Has that completely died away now, do you feel? Do you think that
yes.
wall is breaking down?
I think so. And I think, in fairness, there's a great hunger amongst the Catholic laity for ecumenicalism, in my experience, and they love to have myself present. They enjoy the fact that I'm married, or my lady cures because she's a lady, be it you know, Women's World Day of Prayer, etc. So I do think, and I think that your average lay person can't see the difference. And in reality, churches differ more on how they are governed than on what they believe. So you have the Roman Catholic Church is very hierarchical, the Presbyterian Church is very democratic, and of course we in the Church of Ireland claim we're somewhere in the middle. But I'm aware my parents had their 50th anniversary party at the weekend, and her friends were unable, they're photographed on the steps of the church, they were unable to enter. And like we remember, McQuaid wouldn't let anybody attend Trinity. I think, and even amongst the clergy, I would have to say that most priests, are reasonable. I would have to say that. And it is interesting to look at Protestant denominations in the past. I obviously don't know, but I think way back, they would have been more individualistic. And I think when they became a tiny minority, they really through intermarriage, the Methodists were kind of consumed by the Church of Ireland and the Presbyterians as well. But because we had parish churches in every parish, and when a young couple moved out, there was only the Church of Ireland to go to. But really, I think the same, my hope is, will happen with Christians, that between secularism and other pressures, that they'll band together. And I think we're seeing that. I think that has already happened. I appreciate that if you were to listen to the Pope, it looks black. But if here in Talla, on the ground level, I certainly have terrific cooperation. And I really couldn't say otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And talking about the immigrants again here in Talla, you're working closely with them, and you're talking to them. Mm. How can you describe to me how difficult is it for them? I mean, do you think that that many of these people are putting down roots that they intend to bring up their families and to integrate into the society here?
I think most definitely if we would let them. And certainly I think any African, he is not a transitory migrant from Eastern Europe. He has come here and he really can't return. And his children are Irish, they are not Nigerian, and he has made a commitment. And I think it's a pity that our government really looks to Eastern Europe, because if a recession comes, hopefully people go back, they're short term, etc. But the African really has made an investment, as has the Indian. And I think they are desperately trying to put down roots. And I have an African curate, and he was telling me there that, you know, the African strives to become Irish and is very eager to get citizenship. And, you know, you see it learning Irish dancing, etc. And they don't cling on to their own culture to the same extent. I'm not saying they abandon it, but they don't cling on to it to the same extent.
Yeah. Would you encourage it? Would you encourage?
I think that you have to integrate, and yet I think it's good to know where you came from. But I don't think that you should live in the past. And I think we see this with many Irish people who went to England, and the only way they could cope with it, and when I went up north, it was the same, dream of coming home. That's the only way they could cope with it. But in reality, their children were reared in England and became English. And those people had the choice that they could come home here on their own or stay in England with their grandchildren. And I think that's what happens to your average immigrant. Look at the people in America at the moment who are Irish illegals, but they can't come home. Okay, they might be able to afford a house here, but they're established there. Their careers are established there. Their kids are established there, etc.
But what about this multinational movement of into the one small spot? You're going to have not only integration, but intermarriage and changing.
I think that'll be very interesting. And it is interesting in the past here when we couldn't even have Christian denominations. And obviously that has changed. And it will be interesting, because people will be coming from different backgrounds. culturally. It's not necessarily the young people themselves, because they'll have been reared here, but it'll be their parents and grandparents and that sort of cultural baggage. But I don't know, people tell me that the 50s Ireland was very monocultural and very boring, etc. And there's one thing certainly about the modern Ireland, it is anything but boring. And in fact, if you ask me what was holding me in Tala, the local people are lovely, but the immigrants are the exotic bit. And that is what, that's what, I'm 9.5 years here and I am no intention of moving, because it just changes all the time. And every time I think I have it sussed, I move into a new dimension. So to me, it's as good as armchair traveling.
Well, we've spoken about your work administering here in Tala. And we know what a Catholic priest will do. What about women in the church? How do you see women and the role that they might take?
Well, as you can see already, we had the ordination of women about 15 years ago. And I have a lady curate. Now, she's voluntary. She's a primary school teacher. And she young married woman with children. And she available every second Sunday, more or less, and my part-time African curate is available the other Sundays. But certainly, like, they're the backbone, they're the majority of the congregation. I think they're more spiritual. I'm making sweeping generalizations. So it's very interesting when she preaches. We're both young parents, but she'll sometimes bring a feminine angle to it. They're very much involved now as hospital chaplains, as school chaplains, and often very effective. But like there are quite a few female rectors, parish priests in Dublin, and certainly I can't see any reason why not.
I can see you're wearing all the attire here in front of me. Is that important?
Well, I think it's nice to wear the collar. I know that my Catholic colleagues are afraid that they will get abuse because of child abuse, etc. Obviously, nobody has any way of telling whether I'm Catholic or Protestant. And I have never got any abuse. I wear it all the time around Tala. And the odd time I'll get teenagers, "How are you, Father?" And I'll come back good and strong. But, you know, I have never got any abuse. And to me, it's like seeing the guard on the beat. You have a visible presence. People know who you are. And it often gets you into conversations. But I think it's up to you to overcome people's hesitancy, you know, if the collar is a barrier. I tend to dress reasonably well because I often arrive on a bike, so I don't want people saying, "Oh, look at the state of them," you know. And I think that, like, you know, in business, all the young fellas wear suits, etc. And I think, like, you know, and I'm in a variety of different places within a day, and I just find it handy, you know. It gets you in. But I certainly can't see any disadvantage. I know that people think that it's a bit of a barrier, etc. I think it's up to you to overcome the barrier.
You obviously love your job and you're happy in the position you're in. But could you tell me the nuts and bolts of it, trying to keep together and keep the bread on the table? And you explained to me that, you know, that you're paid from... from your superiors, and you get a check every month.
From the diocese, yes. And you pay into a pension fund, and therefore you can retire. Now, often when you do retire, you might work part time, possibly initially as a curate, or maybe during a vacancy. Or we would often, minimum vacancy is 3 months, but often 6 months, and. My wife works as well. As I say, we gave up the second car, but I would say that we live quietly. I don't rush out and buy the latest expensive, you know, IT or home entertainment. But I certainly wouldn't say that you're deprived. Like, if you have the average industrial wage and you don't have a mortgage, you're not too bad.
It's quite unusual that you know the you took the role you did and come to a place that you did because you were going against the grain. It was difficult, I would imagine, to come in here when you did, you know. But you said to me earlier on you made that decision because
I must say, now don't forget that it was almost 20 years ago when I did, and it was kind of your Protestant friends that kind of saying, what are you doing, giving up a good job? Your Catholic friends were very supportive because there was a great sense of priesthood 20 years ago. Where I live opposite me, since I've come to Tala, there's a Roman Catholic neighbour. And by the way, when I use the term Roman Catholic, we would claim to be Catholic, part of the Church Universal and succession from the apostles. He went in for the priesthood, and I just thought, what a difference. What a difference, because compared to all the support I would have got, and he was experiencing, like, what are you doing going in? And the child abuse was raging at the time, etc. So I would say that I'm glad I didn't go in any earlier, because you have a mandate that you're not here by accident. Plus, you have life experience. I had bought a house at that stage. I had quite a lot of work experience behind me. I'd worked in three different companies for six different bosses, and had, a good bit of experience behind me. But yes, I enjoy. It's the ultimate sell. You're selling an intangible and trying. And when I was selling computers, I was there before people knew what a computer was. I was selling telephone systems when there was no telephones lines in the country, and I was selling jewelry in a recession. So selling God and prosperity is an interesting one. It's a challenge.
It's kind of unusual, isn't it, that that there is no history in your family of, or is there, of minister work,
No,
you know,
no.
uncles, granduncles?
No, none, none. As I say, my father and his brothers, etc., would have been deeply involved as laymen, and they would have been kind of an administrative position in the local parish. My rural cousins, are now these part-time clerics that I was explaining to you. But no, I'm the first, and there are cases where clergy children go on, but by no means all of them. The odd, there is the odd one that does go on. In families, our present archbishop, I think his son is the fifth generation in his family.
It can follow.
It can follow. I think most, like any profession, I think most parents would dissuade their children from whatever profession they're in. But obviously, there's an aptitude or an interest or whatever, and that some of the children can continue.
You spoke finally. I want to ask you. You spoke about the ecumenical coming together of churches. That can't be too far away. In that, I suppose there's always a tradition, but there's so many similarities between different Christian faiths.
There are, on what they believe, like once you believe the Lord's Prayer and the Creed. But as I said to you earlier, it's more on how they're run. And I certainly would find it very difficult to be in a very hierarchical situation. And I think the problem is you get used to what you're reared to. And I would find that very, very difficult. And the Church of Ireland would be reasonably liberal. Now, we're not Irish, we're not that liberal, but and the people have a lot of say. At the synods, they make up two-thirds. They were the people who brought in women priests, and the clergy were hesitant in case it would affect any ultimate ecumenicalism with the Roman Catholics. But it was the people who wanted it and went ahead with it. We've remarriage of divorcees in the last 10 years. I think most clergy are worried enough about marrying a young couple, let alone somebody the second time round. But again, we would have to say that the caliber of the person who goes the second time round really takes it serious. And I don't believe any of the ones that I've done have broken up. So.
And you know, I do know that that you know the type of work you're doing is so good and in bringing people together. What about the place you preach in? You know, the church itself. Can you see that more open, or do you find it?
Well, I have done all of my power to open it. It's an 8th century site, and the tower is 700 years old, and it's a local landmark. It's a local logo, really, of Tala, an unofficial logo. Mm-hmm. And but to a lot of people, the old church, subconsciously, they haven't thought it through. They assume it is the closed church. So any opportunity I can to have concerts in it, etc. The one good thing is the graveyard is common. And I often say we're in about 2% of the population and we're about 2% of the graveyard. So a lot of people, if they've lived in Tala at all, have a grave in the graveyard. And with cremation, it's really unlimited, like for generations to come. So there is a connection there. And with carol services or harvest services, etc., you try and get people in. And I stay there all Sunday morning from 8:30 right to lunchtime. So if anybody's visiting a grave, that the church is open.
Thank you for telling me your story. Very
pleasure.
Much indeed.
Pleasure.